The Lord be with you. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Mark. Jesus entered the synagogue where a man there who had a withered hand. They watched Jesus closely to see if he would cure him on the Sabbath, that they might accuse him. He said to the man with the withered hand, "Come up here before us." Then he said to the Pharisees, "Is it lawful to do good on the Sabbath rather than to do evil? To save life rather than to destroy it?" But they remained silent. Looking around at them with anger and grieved at their hardness of heart, Jesus said to the man, "Stretch out your hand." He stretched it out, and his hand was restored. The Pharisees went out and immediately took counsel with the Herodians against him to put him to death. The Gospel of the Lord. Now, for those of you who are very, very observant, you might recognize that this is a very unusual day in that the priest is wearing purple. And that's not something you see very often. Outside of Advent and outside of Lent, there's very, very few days in which the priest is instructed to wear purple. And the reason for purple, you might not know this, but the reason for the color purple is it's the color of prayer and penance. Keep that in mind today, because the reason why the priest is wearing purple today is because today is the day of observance of prayer for legal protection of the unborn. Now, it's not a feast day, but it is a day in our liturgical books, and it's a day that's in the Ordo that instructs the priest what prayers to say at Mass and what colors to wear when he offers the Mass. The 22nd day of January is the anniversary of the Supreme Court decision Roe versus Wade, as you all know, which paved the way for legal abortion in the United States. And as you all know, a couple of years back, Roe versus Wade was overturned. But I have a question to ask you this morning. After Roe versus Wade was overturned, what changed? You know, we thought that was the great big fight to win, but having fought that fight and won it, we realized that we now have not one fight, but 50 fights. Because to this day, abortion remains legal in every state in the country. Granted, a few things have changed, a law hither and thither, but for the most part, not very much has changed. And this raises a very important point. Namely, that laws don't change unless hearts change first. Unless there's a change of heart, legal changes have little to no effect. They remain largely empty and vacuous. So if you're interested in the cause of the right to life, granted, it has its political expressions, don't get me wrong, but please know this, it is first and foremost a spiritual battle. You might have heard this said in many times in many ways, and pardon me if you haven't heard this said before, but have you noticed that at the heart of the abortion movement is the slogan, "This is my body." The very same words that are used in the consecration. The very same words that are used to bring life into the world are the very same words that the other side uses to destroy life. No, it's not an accident. Please understand this. It has its legal expressions, and you know, God bless those who get out there and fight the legal fight. I want to emphasize one thing, though. This is first and foremost a spiritual battle. Hearts and minds are not changed just by changing laws. Our very own patroness, St. Therese, one of my favorite quotes from her, she says, "My whole strength lies in prayer and penance. These are my invincible arms. They can move hearts far better than words. I know it by experience." That's why the priest wears purple today. Now let me relate that to what we just heard here in the Gospel. If you heard me speak yesterday, you heard me speak about the Sabbath day and how important it is. And how on the Sabbath day there's no work to be done because it's a day set aside for remembrance and prayer of God. However, even as far back as the Old Testament, there was one grand exception to the law of Sabbath rest, and that was emergencies, especially the emergency of protecting life. Because back in 180 BC, the Israelite people found themselves in a war with the Greeks. And once and only once, they decided to rest on the Sabbath day and not fight. And what happened to them? They were slaughtered by the Greeks. Men, women, and children who would not fight back were slaughtered because the Greeks didn't care about the Sabbath rest. And very soon after that, the rabbis got together and they said, well, there's got to be an exception to the Sabbath rest, the protection of life, which gives rise to what Jesus said here in the gospel. But here in the gospel, there's one line I want you to focus on above all else, and it's the last line. The Pharisees took counsel with the Herodians against Jesus to put him to death. Keep that in mind. I once asked my spiritual director, what's the devil's end game? He says, what do you mean, end game? I said, well, he's not dumb. He's a fallen spirit. He's got an exalted intellect greater than yours and greater than mine. If I know, certainly the devil must know that he can't win. He's been defeated forever. He's going to rule over a mound of ashes in hell for all of eternity. You know, what's he struggling for? Why all the furious effort to try to fight back and murder and lie and destroy? What's the devil's end game? And he said, his end game is to destroy God's creation. Knowing that he can't do anything against God, the devil rages and furies with all of his might to destroy what God loves most. And what God loves most is you. All the devil's wiles are actually utilizing us like a token. The real enemy that the devil has is God and his hatred for God. And that's why it's in the nature of evil to try to destroy the good. Evil does not argue with the good. It doesn't reason, it doesn't dialogue. It just tries to destroy the good because it can do no other. It has no reason of its own. It's completely vacuous. By the way, just as an aside, keep that in mind. If you're ever trying to discern the truth of an argument, which side's telling the truth, which side's telling a lie, one very good tool you can use to discern who's telling the lie and who's telling the truth is to ask, which side is trying to censor the other side? Which side wants to silence the opposition? That's the side that's usually trying to protect the lie, because there's no truth in what they have to say. It's pure ideology. And which side wants open and free discussions, wants to get all the facts and all the evidence out? That's usually the side that's telling the truth. That's just as an aside. But the Pharisees took counsel with the Herodians to put Jesus to death, to destroy him. Pharisees and Herodians were two opposite political parties. Think of them as being like Republicans and Democrats. They hated each other. But there's one thing that they hated even more. They hated the truth. They hated Jesus, and they wanted to destroy him. And they succeeded, didn't they? Hey, look at that. Crucifix right in the middle of our church. Good Friday was their great day of victory, wasn't it? Wasn't it? Or was it? We all know what came next. When Jesus rose from the dead on Easter Sunday, the greatest defeat became the greatest victory. What seemed to be the hour of victory for the forces of lies and darkness and hatred and murder became their ultimate and eternal defeat. You must keep that in mind if you're fighting spiritual fights. Please understand, there's only one way to fight a spiritual fight, and that is with spiritual arms. I've told you the importance of prayer and penance, but I also need to tell you the importance of faith. In the Good Fridays of life, you must remember Easter Sunday. You must remember that even though evil has a great PR department, and it appears that they stifle and destroy the truth with chants and slogans and emotional appeals, and it can be immensely frustrating because you want an immediate end to the mighty powers of terrible evils. And we have to learn to stand fast a little bit because we're fighting a spiritual fight. God plays the long game, and in the long game, the cross always wins. Truth and goodness cannot be destroyed, but you must fight with spiritual battle. You must fight with spiritual weapons in the spiritual battle. Prayer, penance, and long-suffering faith. Back in the day, our second bishop, Bishop Keating, he used to settle arguments by saying, "Your cross will become your crown." Now, granted, the bishop used to use that kind of a dismissive phrase. If a priest would come to the bishop and request an appointment and complain about his parish or about his fellow priests or about his assignment, unless he had some kind of a legitimate argument, if he was just bellyaching and complaining, the bishop would turn his head and smile gently and say, "Your cross will become your crown. Your cross will become your crown." It was a dismissive line, but it's deeply, deeply true. As you fight a spiritual battle, as you live the Good Fridays of life, please remember this, along with your prayer and your penance, have the faith to believe that God is more powerful than Lucifer, that the truth is more powerful than the lie, and though that's good and beautiful, can never be defeated, and your cross will become your crown, now and forever.